I'm not going to be able to do that. You're going to have to finish out Air Shifter Mode. I want to say to folks, as we go to these countywide celebrations and stuff like that, that there's a clip of Dr. King that's really been resonating with me as he talked about undergirding the African-American community. We never got that 40 acres and a mule, but the when you, as we sit here in Illinois, in the midst of a land-grant institution, he talked about how the term he used was the peasants from Europe were undergirded with land and farmland and tractors and means to mechanize their farms with subsidies and government dollars, mm-hmm. right? And so I really, 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 really love to spend some time going back into that and seeing that history, but it always rubs me the wrong way when it's just a cliche. We're not really looking at the city levels, at the county levels. How do you you implement a program to say we're going to help African Americans or help people of color, but there's no actual way to mechanize that. There's no dollars put behind that and implementation. So those who are going to be serious, the mayors and county execs and all other different folks who are going to be at these countywide celebrations talking about today is the Martin Luther King celebration and day, I sure would like to see that the work of those bodies reflect and resemble the work of the civil rights movement to actually bring about real change.
Hear that.
So as John Lee Johnson would say back in the day, stay out of trouble. And as Paul Muse likes to say, and I agree, let's get in the right kind of trouble. Peace and much love to you.
Okay. Have a great day. Yeah, that idea, Women's Coalition, I think it does kick off. They have something I heard about, a grant of $3 million. I don't know where it came from, towards early intervention in pregnancy care and stuff, and the public health districts involved in it. So that's happening right now, a worthy venture on a cold day. Good luck turning that engine over. We're going to start out with Mumia Abu-Jamal. He's tipping his hat to Kianga Yamada Taylor, who was a postdoc here on campus. Never got to hear her speak. I think she was busy finishing it up a while back. Mumia Abu-Jamal, political prisoner extraordinaire. Amy Goodman, and then turning our eyes inward, there's a lot I could talk about, a lot I could wisecrack about, given the news of the week and the fire and the fury. What did he say about Korea? Is that the same language? I don't remember now. And there's a little Olympic diplomacy going over there. Bruce Cummings was on Democracy Now! This week. I played a section from him on a Pacifica show last week, and he's well worth turning your attention to. He's heretical. He says that we know about the fiasco that was the Bush's incursion into Iraq, but his East Asian and policy, and particularly vis-a-vis North Korea, was a total catastrophe, too. He threw up the table on the negotiations that were left by the Clinton administration. And you don't hear that point of view very much, particularly after Bush being rehabilitated. Anyway, here's Mumia Abu-Jamal. Then Amy Goodman's Breaking the Sound Barrier. I haven't heard any discussion that her enterprise is subject to garnishment or whatever. I think she's freestanding, even though she says from Pacifica Radio every time she opens her show. But it's been troubling me. There's reference to a meeting that happened this week, and I can't find any information about what happened. So I'll try and fill in some details, and I'll be looking around for maybe Doug Henwood's got something on that. But the health of media is not that good, and I'm not talking about the fight inside of Breitbart.
Capital strikes back. For the last several years, I've mused about the rise of the very rich in politics. To be honest, they've always been in politics, but rarely as politicians. They saw as beneath them the old robber barons, used to walk into state legislatures, bags of money, and they literally bought the legislation they wanted. No more. Since the 90s, at least, we've seen super rich take local, state, and federal offices. I've often wondered why. In reading the latest book from the brilliant young scholar Kianga Mata Taylor, entitled From Hashtag Black Lives Matter to Black Liberation, I found the answer. Professor Taylor cites the 1976 book, Ethics and Profits, The Crisis of Confidence in American Business, by Leonard Silk and David Vogel. The two men interviewed top business leaders who expressed contempt for Congress. One businessman said, "It is up to each of us, not some prostitute of a congressman pandering to get reelected, to decide what should be done." Get that? There it is. By buying media, think tanks, and yes, Congress itself, they built the false logic of businessmen being better at politics than politicians. Thus, see the rise of that imperial idiot, Trump, creating chaos and disaster. Question answered from imprisoned nation. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
And we'll go right on to Amy Goodman's item of the day, Remembrance of Erica Garner.
Erica Garner, rest in peace and justice. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. Erica Garner has died at the age of 27. The loss of this remarkable young African-American woman is incalculable. She was a tireless activist, a mother of two. Her death was attributed to an asthma-induced heart attack 4 months after the birth of her second child, her son, Eric. Erica, like her son, was named after her father, Eric Garner, whose chokehold death at the hands of the New York Police Department on July 27, 2014, was captured on video and became a flashpoint in the fight against police brutality, further galvanizing the Black Lives Matter movement. Erica worked tirelessly for justice for her father.
I can't breathe.
Those were the last words of Eric Garner, repeated 11 times on that July afternoon. 2 weeks later, Michael Brown would be killed by a white police officer on the streets of Ferguson, Missouri. Protests were erupting all over the country. We flew back from Ferguson later that August in order to cover a major march in Staten Island with over 1,000 people demanding justice for Eric Garner, the prosecution of Daniel Pantaleo, the officer who was video recorded by a bystander putting Garner in the chokehold, and an end to the NYPD's systematic brutality that targets communities of color. We first met Erica Garner there, standing at the very spot where her father had been killed.
My dad was a loving man. He was a humble man, and he was a nice man. Like, you could never get a no out of him. Like, he did whatever he could for anybody who came around him. Anybody who came around him was, you know, touched by his graces. Seeing the videotape, I was very traumatized. I was very, like, horrified. It was horrible. Just seeing my father die on national TV is just horrible. You know, I gotta live with this forever.
Erica was a loving daughter, forced into the spotlight by tragedy. She led twice weekly marches from the police precinct where her father's killer still worked to the site of his death. She spoke out against police brutality, appeared on panels and on television. Erica Garner, living in one of the roughest housing projects in New York City, became a powerful leader in the national movement to end police brutality. Speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour 2 years ago, Erica described the toll that a trauma like the killing of a father takes on a family.
When you deal with grief, when you talk about grief and you talk about family and how regular families deal with it, you know, families have problems. Family has trouble with coping with it. But it makes it so different because now we are part of this national scale. Like, everything we do is in the paper. We got people coming from the left field giving us bad advice, people coming in with their own agendas, and it's like we were thrashing to the spotlight and was like out there. We don't have union reps and people to represent us and tell us, well, you need to do this, you need to do that, and you know, my family has just been dealing with that, trying to stay organized and also deal with the fact that my father is gone and, like, nothing is being done about it. And, you know, mental health is very important. If you hear Bill de Blasio say, you know, it's very important and we need, you know, to do something about it. And it's like families that's put in my position, black families that's on public assistance that doesn't have the income, to get therapy is $300 an hour. And I don't think that's fair. And it's not made for the black population, because how are we supposed to cope with this if we don't have someone to talk to, someone professionally to talk to? So now my family is trying to figure out I'm trying to figure out how can I, you know, get past that barrier and find someone to talk to deal with this, because this is trauma. This is my three-year-old niece bashed a boy in the head with a book at school and said that, "I'm angry. The cops killed my grandfather. That's the reason why I did it." She wasn't mad at the kid, but it's she's so young, and for her to say that, it hurts my heart. And now she's in, you know, she got to talk to someone at her daycare or whatever, and it's just not fair. And we just need whatever put into place for mental health, to take care of our mental health, because it's very important. It's very important, you know, dealing with grief. I still haven't accepted that my father is gone, even though I talk about my dad, but I talk about him in a case study. Like, I've been studying this case. For the latest updates, you can go to my website or to Twitter, officialericagardner.com or officialerica on Twitter. And, you know, you can see I'm constantly reading articles and doing the research on my dad's case, but I'm not taking care of me.
Early in 2016, Erica endorsed Bernie Sanders for president and appeared in a moving television ad.
"This is everything that I have, my family. Family should be important to everyone. Mostly I like being a mother."
About her father, she says in the ad,
"I'm just trying to get the truth out there to tell his side of the story. He was being the loving, caring man that he was, and he was murdered."
Leaked emails later revealed that now disgraced movie mogul Harvey Weinstein became alarmed at the power of the Sanders ad. He offered to help Hillary Clinton's campaign manager, Robbie Mook, strategize to counter Erica's message. Erica's power was speaking from her own experience. She even considered running for Congress. While New York City finally paid Eric Garner's family a settlement, Erica continued to fight for the release of the full disciplinary records of Officer Pantaleo, who remains on the New York police force. And to her last breath, Erica also fought for federal civil rights charges to be brought against Pantaleo and the officers who killed her father. In her Bernie Sanders ad, Erica says,
"I'm never giving up. I'm never going to forget. And I don't want the world to forget what happened to my dad."
Now the onus is on all of us never to forget the passion, the commitment, the life of Erica Garner. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
I missed the Harvey connection in that. Breaking the Sound Barrier essay there on the web page. Again, I recommend Bruce Cummings About Korea on this week. A lot of good stuff, including the James Risen piece, talking about this 15,000-word piece of his experiences of being shut down by the New York Times in one of what would have been a blockbuster, and was indeed when it was released, but it could have been a year earlier. So I wrote about NPR covering finally Felix Sater and the money laundering aspects of Donald Trump's career. Where were you a year and a half ago before the election, when I certainly knew about this stuff? Deference given to rich men is pretty outrageous in this culture. Well, anyway, there's a guy that owns the Empire State Building, and he's leasing to WBAI. WBAI suffered a setback when Hurricane Sandy came up to their second floor of their then studio. They had to relocate completely. So there's a lot of accusations of mismanagement, but they've also had some untoward actions which led to this million eight, maybe, debt they have. This is a discussion with Brian Edward Tiekert and the interim executive director. And for some reason, there's no possibility of having a permanent Pacifica Foundation director. He's advocating reorganization through Chapter 11. It was maybe again decided Friday. Yesterday, I haven't heard anything, seen anything posted. Doug Henwood doesn't have anything up. He's got a good rapport with this fellow we're going to hear interviewed. It's extremely important to me. Pacifica has been a rock. I use a lot of their programming. I listen to it myself a lot. Up Front is a two-hour program every morning. Brian Edwards Tiekert does some great work, along with an African-American woman named Kat something, activist in the Bay Area. This is from KPFA, Pacifica. Clarifies some things about how immediate the effects might be of a decree that might go out on Monday. But, and like I said, there are still some question marks hanging in the air. We won't get to all of it. You can find it, though I had difficulty navigating to this in the KPFA archives. It kept disappearing. I got some files not founded. I surmise that maybe so many people are going after this that they're overloading the server or something. I'm not sure. But eventually I got a hold of it. This went out January 4th, so pretty fresh, but not incorporating what happened yesterday. And I'll be looking around a little bit while this is playing. The very last question, which we won't hear from caller, was about whether there's something sub rosa going on. Is this some kind of takeover? And it's not too conspiratorial, since that's what happened a few years ago when regular airshifters like Dennis Bernstein were locked out of the studios at KPFA by a dissident faction or dissenting faction or different faction in the foundation. So, like I said, there's a lot of issues to talk about, but I think talking about how the issues get heard and what the media does, the commonplaces of the media are astonishing. What goes as acceptable reality without any examination is really overwhelming. And that's why this show is called News from Neptune, because when you start talking about what I think is really going on, since it's not talked about in corporate press, corporate media, it sounds like it's coming from an orthogonal universe or something. Anyway, here's Brian Edwards Tiekert, who does some great work at KPFA in Berkeley. This is from the show Up Front, and an interview about Pacifica's financial predicament.
That there is a serious financial crisis afflicting Pacifica, the nonprofit that owns KPFA. Although this radio station is financially healthy, and thank you for your year-end gifts, our sister station in New York, WBAI, has been raising very little money and is trapped in a lease on their antenna tower that they just cannot pay. It currently costs $60,000 per month. It has regular increases that will take it well past that baked in. In late 2016, the landlord, the Empire State Realty Trust, sued for unpaid rent. 3 months ago, they won a judgment of just over $1.8 million plus attorney's fees. Now, WBAI has no assets to speak of for them to seize, but since WBAI is part of the same legal entity as KPFA, that means the landlord can come after the station's bank account, and it can come after the building that we broadcast from. In fact, they have filed paperwork in California that would allow them to do that as early as this Monday. I want to be clear, because I've heard this misdescribed elsewhere. There is no scenario I know of where that would knock KPFA off the air immediately. On Monday, in the worst case scenario, the Empire State Realty Trust would have a lien on our building, but that does not mean they would be able to close the doors, force us out, or force a sale. They could do those things eventually. That would take a much longer legal process. KPFA's bills are paid up. Some are paid well into the future. Even if our bank account were seized, we would be able to keep broadcasting for some time. And in theory, this is a situation that is solvable. Our network owns real estate worth somewhere around $10 million. Pacifica's broadcast licenses are worth something on the order of $100 million. There is no reason a judgment of $1.8 million should destroy this organization. And yet, in the 3 months since that judgment, and in the more than 1 year since the lawsuit was filed, Pacifica's governing board of directors has been unable to commit to any actions that would protect us from the chaos of asset seizure. Now, last month, December 14th, Pacifica's board met on the phone with Julianne Mosler. She is a deputy California attorney general from the Charitable Trust section. Their job is to regulate California nonprofits. Here's a clip of her speaking to them.
I won't tell you what to do. Your attorney, your CFO, and your officers have thoroughly examined all the options available to Pacifica. They will answer your questions and provide you with all the information you need to make a decision. But you must make a decision, because refusing to do so is an abdication of the responsibilities you accepted when you took a seat on the national board, and creates a very real risk that Pacifica and its mission will burn to ashes around you.
If you don't make a decision, Pacifica and its mission could burn to ashes. That was towards the beginning of that board meeting on December 14th. Deputy Attorney General left the call. 35 minutes later, here's what the remainder of that meeting sounded like.
Well, that's not even the point of order that you just called.
Jonathan, we're out of approval, so can we go? Can we go?
We're still on agenda approval, people. That's where we are.
We're voting on agenda approval, please.
Okay. So we're going to take a vote again. But mind you, okay. If we were to approve the agenda now, there would be only a minute left.
That is the Pacifica National Board, 35 minutes after being told by the State Attorney General's office that this organization could burn to ashes if they don't act, fighting over whether to approve their agenda. Eventually they did, and they started fighting over approving their minutes. Then the meeting ran out of time. They met again 4 days later, no action. They met 10 days after that, no action. They met this Tuesday in closed session. No action that I know of. Nothing's been reported out publicly. Their last chance to act will be on a conference call noticed for tonight. And at that point, I reach the limits of my ability to explain the situation, because I do not understand the debates and divisions on this issue within our current board. Maybe our next guest does. I had promised we would bring on someone who's able to speak on behalf of Pacifica as an organization. Bill Crozier is joining us on the phone. He wears two hats. He is a member of Pacifica's board of directors. He represents listeners at our sister station, KPFT in Houston. He's also currently serving in a volunteer capacity as Pacifica's interim executive director. Bill, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Brian. Good to be here with you.
I just want to start by getting disclosures out of the way. First, we're going to talk about Pacifica's debts. I'm technically one of Pacifica's creditors, because Pacifica's behind on required payments and to a retirement fund that benefits employees, and I'm an employee here. And second, I've served on Pacifica's board in the past as a staff representative from KPFA. I have served with Bill. We did not always vote the same way. I have never had cause to doubt your commitment to Pacifica's well-being or your commitment to getting your facts right. So, anything else to put out there?
No, it's pretty much summarizes it, right? And I respect you, too. I remember working with you before on the Pacific National Board, and it's definitely experience. It's become even worse than ever, I think, the way our boards are functioning.
I gave a lengthy introduction. I summarized the facts as I knew them. Did I get anything wrong or anything you want to correct or expand on?
No, I think you got it about right. And appreciate the background, giving that to all of our listeners.
Okay. Well, you're the executive director. Have you proposed a concrete course of action for the board to pursue?
Well, yes, I and our CFO, Sam Agarwal, did propose filing Chapter 11 bankruptcy.
Sam Agarwal is the chief financial officer for Pacifica.
Right, and all of our officers have agreed with this. And this was mostly because of advice of our attorneys, all of whom said we should do that because we have the judgment, as you mentioned, from Empire State Realty Trust. We have to pay $1.8 million plus interest and attorney's fees and other things. And we don't have any written agreement with them that they won't come in and start seizing assets. Now, as you kind of indicated, there they won't necessarily do that. They could do that. They've already filed their judgment in every state where we have operations, and the other states do not have the 30-day waiting period that California has, and they haven't moved to seize assets yet, but they could at any time, and that's what makes us very nervous, and that's why our attorneys also advised us to go ahead and file Chapter 11 in order to allow us to continue operations. Chapter 11 would stop all in collection efforts by creditors in our state or anyone else and give us time to reorganize and come up with a plan to pay our debts. But the majority did not want to do that. And I'll just make an addition. Tuesday night in the special meeting, and yes, it was an executive session, and the board did approve moving forward on two loans. And the loans were, one is a short-term loan that would hopefully encourage Empire State Realty Trust to sign a written forbearance agreement if we give them several hundred thousand dollars as sort of a down payment on the judgment. And then also the board approved moving ahead on another loan, a bigger one, longer term, that may take a couple of months to get. And hopefully they hope that they can get that. And that will allow all of the judgment to be paid off and probably some of our other obligations. The worrisome thing to me is that we don't have an agreement on how to pay off any loan yet. And personally, I think it's irresponsible. It does give us time, but we eventually have to come up to a decision how we're going to pay off the debt.
Okay, let's start with what the board has actually done then. You mentioned the short-term loan. Does that mean they actually voted on the terms of a loan agreement on Tuesday night?
Yes, although the details are not, we don't have the details yet. So it'll still
wait, how do you vote on a loan you don't have the details of?
Well, they've approved moving ahead on it. I'll just put it that way. And so...
No, I want to be clear here. Did they enter the foundation into a loan on Tuesday night?
The final details will have to come back to the board for approval. But they did approve the terms for the two loans. But the terms actually are subject to change, and you know, it depends on if you've ever bought a house or something like that. You know, there's many pages of fine print that come along with a loan. We don't have those yet, so we don't know the details yet of what that will be.
Will the board have them before tonight's meeting?
No, probably next week sometime. I'm not so much worried about that. I mean, we obviously do have to check that. The shorter term one is from some friends of one of our stations. I'm hoping they will be reasonable, the terms, and I can't really go into the details. It was an executive session, and the board did not agree to release details of that. The longer term one I'm a little more worried about, because the assumption is that we will be able to get a loan for more money with acceptable terms. And there was a loan proposal brought to us in November, and the overall general terms, interest rate, points, things like that, looked, you know, not too awful. But then when we got the documents for the loan, the details, 129 pages of them, it was filled with a lot of pretty scary things that were really unacceptable, and that was never even brought up to a vote, that loan. But they are looking for another loan now. There's actually two different possibilities that we have a loan broker looking at.
Okay, let's stay off the hypothetical loans for a second and talk about the one that you described the board is moving towards on Tuesday. This is the first time hearing about it. It sounds like it would not be enough to cover Pacifica's debt. How much would it be for?
It would be at least $500,000. They're still putting together some additional people to lend money up to about $1 million, probably between $500,000 and $1 million, which would be a substantial part of the judgment. And that's why they hope that will be enough to entice Empire State Realty Trust to sign a written forbearance agreement. That's the whole purpose of it.
The Empire State Realty Trust, agreed that it would issue a forbearance agreement with a down payment like that?
No. We don't know if they will or not. That's what I'm concerned about. I don't know if they will.
I have to ask this because of Pacifica's history. Would any of the people lending Pacifica money be current board members or immediate family of current board members?
For this immediate loan, the short-term loan, yes. In fact, it was organized by a current director and her husband and some friends of theirs. And that was fully disclosed to the national board, though.
Would they be earning interest off the loan?
Yes.
Has Pacifica been advised by its lawyers what self-dealing is?
Yes. There is a provision in the bylaws also for disclosure of this sort of thing and acknowledgement by the board that they accept this. And that was in the motion that they accepted that.
Can you tell us which board members and family members of board members would be giving that loan to Pacifica?
That was not in the Republic report out from the meeting, so I can't talk about that. I mean, they may want to identify themselves later. A lot of people do know who they are, but I'm not at liberty to mention the names or the details. Wish I could, but... and I must admit, I'll say I voted against both of these loan proposals, and because, frankly, I still think we should follow the recommendations of our attorneys who recommended that we file Chapter 11 bankruptcy. I'm hopeful that this will work. I'm hopeful this is the right approach, but I'm skeptical. And, you know, I feel we have an obligation to make sure we protect all our assets. And until we can get a written agreement from Empire State Realty Trust, we're really at their mercy. Again, they have not moved to collect on any of the judgment in our other locations where there's no waiting period. They haven't waited yet, but I don't know how long their patience will last. But I think we'll find out by the end of next week if they will accept this loan and give us a written agreement. That's the whole purpose of that.
Would the loan that the board is moving towards be secured against any of Pacifica's property?
Yes, the KPFK building.
The studio for our sister station in Los Angeles.
Right, so where KPFK is and the Pacifica Radio Archives. And the longer-term loan, they may get to use all of the buildings that we own as collateral, although the details are still to be worked out on that.
That would be studios for KPFK in Los Angeles, KPFT in Houston, and this radio station, KPFA in Berkeley.
Yes, and the national office where it is, which is next door to KPFA.
And I understand this is not the position that you are advancing in the board, but you have a better window into deliberations that have happened in closed session, obviously, than any of the rest of us do. Pacifica's in debt and lost this judgment because it couldn't keep up on the payments it currently has, which begs the question, how would it keep up plus make loan payments on top of that? What is the plan?
Well, and also how to pay it off. Now, there's no interest to be paid for the first, I believe it's 6 months of the short-term loan. If it goes that long, the assumption is it will probably be paid off before then by the bigger loan. And the bigger loan they're looking towards, looking for, it would be have no interest payments for at least a year. So the cash flow is a big problem because you're right. We're not even able to make current payments on the existing tower lease in New York. We don't have enough cash flow for that. And they're struggling to pay their other bills. And I must admit, all of the stations, including KPFA, have lost listeners over the years. And it's a problem for all public radio stations. But it's been a special problem for our New York station. So they're still struggling. And these loans depend on having a way to pay them off later, and that hasn't been defined yet. The board is looking at possible signal swaps or possibly selling buildings. So they're talking about that. I don't think selling buildings is the answer either, because it won't generate enough cash, even if you sold all the buildings, to take care of all of our financial obligations that we have. We have a lot of other debt besides the Empire State Realty Trust judgment.
You've been advancing a proposal for bankruptcy. I guess I should put the same question about your scenario to you. If Pacifica entered into bankruptcy, it suspends debt collection efforts.
Yes.
But that is with the goal of reorganizing and having a judge sign off on the plan for reorganizing. What would that entail? In bankruptcy, how would Pacifica arrange to pay its debts?
Okay, well, it's a good question. In bankruptcy, you're right, it would stop collection efforts and give us time. We'd have probably about 4 months to come up with a plan to reorganize our finances to pay off our debts. Now, we would be required to pay off all the debt. Now, some of it may be questionable, and we might be able we could challenge some of it. We may get some of it reduced. But we owe about $8 million altogether. And so even if you can whack off $1 or $2 million, that's still a lot of money. And I think it would require doing a frequency swap, a signal swap for one of our stations, because I don't think
you should explain
there's any other
what
way
is.
Of coming up with the money for that. Pardon?
Explain what a swap is. That's broadcast nerd language.
Right. Okay. So that's where you do a trade essentially with another broadcaster station, and one that has an inferior signal, one that does not cover as many people, it has a smaller coverage area, and where you trade licenses essentially, and so they would pay for the extra coverage area. And of course, you're having to give up something. Nobody's going to give us $4 million without getting something in return. But WBAI, for example, is in the middle of the commercial part of the band in New York. Its license is worth a lot of money. We also had some swap offers for WPFW, our DC station. And the board several weeks ago required that we open up the search to all of our stations for possible swaps.
I should mention for our listeners, KPFA is also in the commercial portion of the spectrum.
Yes, right. And none of the offers we haven't received a whole lot of offers, but you know, none of them are pain free. All of them have some significant downsides because we'd have to give up something, as we were saying, in order to get the amount of money that we owe. But frankly, I don't see any other way out of this. We've been talking for years about, you know, well, we're going to do better next year. We're going to be doing better later this year in terms of our finances, but we haven't. We've been running deficits, I think, every year for the last about 15 years. And as you mentioned, we haven't even put any money at all into our pension funds for any of our stations for about the last 3 years. And we have other, that's part of the debt we owe. And clearly we have to be fair to our employees and pay that. And I think we need to do it very soon. And we have other creditors that are, you know, need to be paid also.
Speaking of Bill Crozier, he's the interim executive director of Pacifica. He's not paid for that job. He is a member of Pacifica's national board that is volunteering in that capacity. In a couple of minutes, Bill, we're going to take calls from our listeners, but I want to circle back to the big picture question I kind of opened the conversation with. You laid out several options, one of which you endorse at this point, which is bankruptcy and reorganization, another of which the board is pursuing, which is loans with an as-yet-to-be-determined mechanism for paying them off. I guess the big picture question is, we're less than a week from asset seizures possibly starting in California. Why hasn't the board signed off on any of the options that would protect Pacifica and its stations up till this point? This lawsuit was filed over a year ago.
Well, that's a good question. I mean, the clip you played from the Pacific National Board meeting a few weeks ago, it's sort of indicative. I mean, every meeting has that sort of thing. It's not every minute, but there's just an awful lot of chaos. It usually takes an hour or more, as you were indicating, to get through agenda approval and approval of the minutes. People bring up objections and argue over all kinds of trivia. A lot of it's apparent stalling tactics. We've been meeting. We met at least once a week, and every week in December. We've been doing that almost all year. Sometimes twice a week, as we had a meeting earlier. We had a meeting Tuesday this week. We had another meeting a couple weeks ago, two meetings in 1 week. And yet we still can't get through the agenda. We have people that, many people, we have some really good dedicated board members, also, I'll put it that way, but we also have some that only seem to want to stall and create chaos in the board meetings. And I think we have to change that if we're going to resolve our problems, because you know, we have some really serious matters to talk about. How are we going to pay off our debt? And we can't just keep kicking the can down the road, and we can't just argue with each other. We need to focus on how do we raise money and or cut expenses. And we have a lot of board members that do help with raising money. We have a lot of them who don't do anything to help raise money or help their station with outreach to get new listeners and things like that. Most boards for nonprofits have people that help with fundraising, and they help get major donors or grants and that sort of thing. And we have only a few people that are doing that. So in the long run, we have to address those issues. Those are the bigger, longer-term issues. In terms of, you know, why they haven't acted right now, you know, I'm one board member. I basically have to follow the directions of the majority, and they've decided to go the loan approach. So I hope that will work. I will help to make sure it works if it will. It depends on getting a judge. I mean, a signed agreement from Empire State Realty Trust, though, saying that they will not move to seize assets. We don't have that written agreement yet. And this first loan, the one that we're trying to put together in a real hurry, will hopefully entice them to do that. That's the whole purpose of it. And the board majority clearly believes that they will do that. They have not, you know, again, they have not moved to seize assets yet in the other locations where we have operations and where there's no...
Why do they think the Empire State Realty Trust, the landlord, would hold back? They've already gone to court and gotten a judgment against us.
If they cleaned out every bank account in all of Pacifica, it still wouldn't be enough for our judgment, to fulfill the judgment. And it would clearly interfere with operations. You know, we're going to continue operating one way or the other. If they did that, we would...
So is it just speculation about what their tactics would be? Like they haven't made an oral or written agreement to forbear if they can get a certain amount of money?
Correct. And that's why I'm worried. But just to be clear, you know, they know that we don't have enough money in all of our bank accounts to pay all the judgment. And if they did clean out our bank accounts, we'd clearly file Chapter 11 immediately to protect the rest of our assets.
Yeah, but if they had slapped liens on our buildings first, they could try to force us into liquidation and then get paid out of the proceeds from selling off, having a fire sale in all our buildings.
Yeah, that's possible. And that's...
And the lien goes into place Monday.
Yes. Yeah, the liens, as I understand it, I think they're basically automatic, or they... almost on. They get once the judgment is registered in each state, then think of it liens on our buildings. You're right. Doesn't mean that they sell them right away, but it means that it limits what we can do, and it also could potentially interfere with getting additional loans.
Bill Crozier, we got to take a break. We'll come back with calls from our listeners. We're speaking to Bill Crozier. He's the interim executive director of Pacifica Foundation. That's a nonprofit that owns KPFA. If you want to call in with questions for him, the number is 510-848-4425. That's 510-848-4425. A couple of ground rules here, because I can see there are many more people than normal.
And this was recorded on Tuesday. I don't know what happened with the Friday meeting. I was looking around earlier. I still haven't had any... transparency on that. This is about Pacifica's plight. Again, I think that it doesn't affect Democracy Now! I think she's freestanding after leaving from BAI, going to the Firehouse Studios and all that. So I forgot about the news break in here. I was editing this earlier. I've had a couple of interactions with people, some wefty, saying $60,000 for a spot on the Empire State Building, and yeah, an escalator clause in it as well. Why they signed that? Well, they had a good deal on a transmitter site, but it was on the World Trade Center. This goes back to 2001. There's a bit of an irony there that alternative news is threatened by being on the Empire State Building after being on the World Trade Center and knocked out by the terrorist attack. What else can I say? Doug Henwin on his Facebook page is putting up statements from the fellow we're hearing interviewed here by Brian Edwards Tekert. Speaking of Henwood, I haven't downloaded his Behind the News episode, so I can't tell you what's on it this week. It's being podcast through Jacobin Magazine, which he has some association with, along with his wife, Lisa Featherstone, generally organized out of Chicago, Jacobin Magazine. Controversial in its own right, but that's just the way it is, I guess. Again, this was recorded on the 4th of June, so January, I mean, a couple of days ago. So I don't think I can actually put these news items on. The news items, the staff at KPFA has a different tilt on things. This is from Upfront, and they had stuff, kind of a colloquium between Brian Edwards Tekert and another morning show host about this whole Fire and Fury Hollywood reporter fellow. Sounds like a reality TV show, but it's not. I gather he did a, Trump did, in the lead up to the election, did an interview with the TV, visit to his gaudy penthouse with Harvey Levin of TMZ. So he hangs out with that. And then, I haven't reprised this in a while, but there's a fight over his call-ins to the Howard Stern show. There's some of that you can hear about. Somebody's doing transcripts of it to get around the case, if you want to read how foul and profane current POTUS was. All right, let's see. I'm sorry I didn't edit this segment out, because we would have more time to hear it. The very last question is about whether there's something else going on. Is this some kind of takeover? I think that attributes too much sense to it, but this guy couldn't rule it out that that might be a faction of the board that's wants to get control of the assets in some way through having the loan that's keeping it going. I'm not sure.
As early as Monday, when the landlord, the Empire State Realty Trust, will have cleared the notice hurdle they need to in order to start moving in on assets in California. And the two California stations, KPFA here in the Bay Area and KPFK in Los Angeles, have far more assets in the form of real estate than anyone else owned by Pacifica, which is obviously why we're concerned. We're spending the hour with Bill Crozier. He's the interim executive director of Pacifica. He's also a member of the Pacifica National Board. The best positioned person we could find to speak on behalf of the organization and the people who are making decisions about our fate. And the rest of the hour will be devoted to your questions. 510-848-4425. First up, we have Mark in Berkeley. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you, folks, for your good work trying to keep this network alive. I'm just curious if there's any discussion or plans about WBAI. In other words, I mean, with all these issues with their finances, the antenna and their location, I think was on Wall Street or still on Wall Street. But the thing that concerns me, the aide to Trump, there's like a 6,000 listenership. I really feel like something is amiss at that station. And I really feel like if we're all expected to sort of keep backing them up, that they need to be open to some serious reorganization over there. And I'm just curious if any of that has been discussed or what possibilities. I'll take the answers on the air. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mark. Bill?
Well, that's a good question. And, right, they have lost more listeners than any of other stations. All of our stations have lost some listeners, but they've lost more. And, I mean, that's really the heart of the financial problems there. We depend on listeners for almost all of our donations. All of our stations do. And not without listeners, we don't have donations as well. And I've been pushing pretty hard for some changes for programming and the way they do fund drives, for example. They have very long fund drives. And they have about five a year, and they're running 4 to 5 weeks each. And that, I know that drives listeners away. And in the short term, yes, you get a little more money every time you add an extra day of fund drive, but would preempt a lot of programs, and I think they're struggling to figure out how to make that work and how to provide programming that's relevant to people. And, you know, here in the days of Trump and craziness coming out of Congress, you know, we need to be have strong voices with providing people with real news and tell people what's going on that they don't get to hear from the other broadcasters.
But Bill, they've been struggling with those issues for as long as I've been part of Pacifica. I pulled the last audit off Pacifica's website. WBAI ran a deficit in 2014 of $700,000. According to that audit, they had racked up $4.5 million of internal debt to the rest of the network, either dues they didn't pay to the national office or money they borrowed from other stations or the national office to pay their bills. That's before they went into debt with their landlord. I think the recital of woes, like the time for that is a long time ago. The question is, what would change that situation?
Well, I think you're right. And right, the internal debt is in addition to what we owe to Empire State Realty Trust. They have to change the way they're operating. They have to change, I think they have to change some programming, and they have to change the way they do fund drives more than anything else, and do a really good promotion campaign once they've changed programming. Because we have to have programming that people want to hear.
Do you actually think that with the staffing and resources and audience they have now, they have a basis for turning around?
I think some changes need to be made. I probably shouldn't be talking about the specifics that might possibly involve personnel. But I'll just say that, you know, yes, they have a much smaller staff than you did at KPFA, and that is a problem. But WPFW, which is our DC station, they're struggling also, but they have roughly the same size staff, and they're doing better. And KPFT has an even smaller paid staff. It's almost all volunteers, and they're doing better. And so, you know, it's possible a bigger staff certainly helps. They don't have the funds to get to a bigger staff right now. And in fact, they did have a larger staff, and they were forced to lay off about two-thirds of their staff about 4 years ago because of the deficit spending. So even with a larger staff, they were not being able to pay their bills back then. So that's, you're right. They have to be able to willing to change some of the ways they're operating.
I guess I'll ask the obvious follow-up. After more than a decade of losses and multiple management changes and program changes in that time to try to turn it around, none of which have, why shouldn't Pacifica just cut its losses and sell the station?
Well, you know, WBAI is in the biggest media market in the country, the largest city in the country. And, you know, for our mission, We need more radio stations rather than less, and we certainly need a strong voice in New York. I think it can be turned around, and frankly, I think our board is one of the problems we have. As I was saying earlier, we have board members that don't want to help with outreach; they don't want to help with fundraising. Most nonprofits do have board members that do that, and your clip of a typical board meeting with all the dysfunction and inability to make decisions is, I think, the underlying problem that we have. We have to get that resolved. If we can get our board's working and board's functional, especially the national board, you know, I think we can turn WBAI around as well as the other stations also. of the other station that, well, let's say turn them around, but they all need more listeners and more support.
Fair enough.
It's important for our mission.
I have been bugging us too long with follow-ups while our listener calls have been piling up. Next on the line, we have James in Livermore. Good morning.
Yes, I'm very, very glad to hear all this good work dedicated to save this important network. I was just curious whether or not there needs to be a paradigm shift where you have more of a streamlining of salaries and bringing in more volunteers generally, and this includes all the stations, WBAI, KPFA, KPFT, KPFK, as a way to sort of shift it away from more of a community organizing model where you're resonating with community organizing to get smaller donations over a larger number of people as a way to address some of the internal debt within each of the stations that may contribute to a better outcome next time. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you for that, James. Bill?
Okay, thank you. Well, we certainly need more volunteers at all the stations. Some of them, I'm from KPFT, I'm more familiar with that. They rely almost completely on volunteers. Almost all the programmers are volunteers. We have volunteers doing all kinds of other things, too. Obviously, we have have to have a small staff. They're paid staff. And I'd like for it to be bigger, but it allows them to have shorter fund drives and still provide great programming. And we carry programming. All the stations carry programming from other stations. All the stations carry some programming from KPFA, for example, and, you know, we trade programs around. But most of the programming is locally generated at each of our locations. And that allows us to have more relevance to the community, to local community. And I think we do need a mixture of small donations as well as larger ones. We haven't been doing much work to get the larger ones, though, to go with major donors and grants. And I think that would help a lot also.
All right, next on the line, we have Ellen in Berkeley. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Quick question. What is the interest rate on that short-term loan of $500,000? Why is the short-term loan only $500,000? Because they raised like maybe half of the 1.8, so that would give an incentive to the company to give you a forbearance. And then how is it that the board members who are obstructing the filing of bankruptcy, I mean, what reasons are they giving if it's going to protect Pacifica? Common sense would tell you you've got to do something to get these people off your back. Thank you. I'll take it off the air.
Thanks, Ellen.
Okay. Well, I'm not at liberty to discuss the details of the loan. It was an executive session, and that details were not in the public report out. But
what is the board's rationale? Bill Crozier, what is the board's rationale for keeping the interest rate on a loan from board members and their friends confidential?
Well, I don't know. I've been suggesting pretty strongly that most of this stuff should be an open session, and I don't think it's appropriate to have a lot of this in executive session. If we're discussing proprietary information or personnel or contracts or legal strategy, that certainly should be an executive session. But my personal feeling is that we should be doing more of this in open session. But, you know, this is a board decision, and they decided to do this in executive session. But in terms of the Ellis question, the amount of the loan, of the short-term loan, is because this is being put together by some friends of one of the stations. And so it's however much money they and their friends can come up with, basically, within a week or two. That's the reason for the amount. And then that's why we need a longer-term loan in order to pay that one off and to pay the rest of the judgment. So we're working on both of those right now. And in terms of the disruptive behavior, I know that is a real problem. It's been a problem for quite some time, in terms of board dysfunction and inability to come up with long-term solutions and strategies. And I and our CFO have pushed pretty strongly, given a number of recommendations over the last year, or last several months especially, and it's been hard to get the board to agree on any of those. A lot of disagreement, and the disruptions are getting worse. This last year, it's been really awful. We've had to have longer meetings, more meetings, and we still don't get hardly anything done because of all the disruptions. And people just bring up all kinds of trivial things to argue about, sometimes not even related to the motion that's on the floor.
Well, you know, Pacifica's boards have been legendary for their infighting, at least since we created the elected board system in, I believe, 2003, which I guess begs the question whether it's structural. Is there something fundamentally dysfunctional about how the boards are set up to operate rather than it just being bad people?
Well, I think there is. And, you know, I was a supporter of the new, I wasn't involved in the revolution in Pacifica about 15, 16 years ago. We changed, threw out the old bylaws, get new bylaws, had democratically elected boards. I thought it sounded like a great idea. I know there were people who had really good intentions with it, but most of the people I've talked with who were even involved in the writing of those bylaws have admitted it's been a failure, because we've come to the point where even though we have democratically elected boards, we end up with having people with relatively few, very little support from the membership that end up becoming much more powerful on the national board and are able to block actions. It's exceedingly difficult to remove people from the national board, no matter how disruptive they are, or no matter how little they do to help the foundation, shall we say. And I think we have to make some changes in the bylaws, and especially the way we support board, choose board members. I'm one of them. I'd be glad if all of us were thrown out and just start over with something else. I don't know what that something else would be, though. I do like the concept of having democratically elected boards, but we have to change something because it's just not working. And, you know, it's just, this is about Pacifica survival. You know, if we get through this in the short term, and I hope we will, this judgment, we still have longer term issues. We have all this other debt, and we have boards that, board members that are, you know, can't agree on how to face that and how to deal with it. And again, our CFO and I have made recommendations, and they mostly fall on deaf ears. You know, there's too much, everything, there's a suggestion, people are arguing about it, and we need some better planning.
All right, let's go to more calls. We have Susie on the line waiting patiently in Oakland. Good morning.
Good morning. I would like to know how we can get more transparency on the board members that are causing the dissension. How can we find out who these people are? Secondly, I enjoy tuning into WBAI early in the morning, California time, and listening to the programs that come from the New York station. When I travel to the Southern California area, I listen to KPFK, and I agree wholeheartedly that there should be more stations, not fewer stations. It's wonderful to travel anywhere and be able to pick up a Pacifica station. In addition to that, the real estate board that has this debt over our head, I would not expect them to do Pacifica Foundation any favors whatsoever. So I would expect them to collect on their debt and put us out of business. And we're not going to let that happen. We're not going to let it happen. $1.8 million is not very much money at all. So we are not doing, we, all of us collectively, are not doing what we should to let more people know that the Pacifica Foundation exists. There's a whole new group of listeners that are out there that don't know the station exists. I'm always asking people.
Susie, I take your point, but you got to wrap it up.
Okay. Well, what are we going to do?
All right. Bill Crozier?
Okay, well, the first part of your question, more transparency. Write to the National Board. You can email them at PNB, which stands for Pacifica National Board, PNB@Pacifica.org, and let them know your concerns and your suggestions. I'm one of the ones who does believe in more openness and transparency. I think more of these discussions should be an open session, and because I think the members deserve to know this, and the listeners deserve to know that. And you're right, WBI has some good programming. All of our stations have some good programming, but some changes also have to be made because they're clearly not getting enough listeners, and we also need more promotion. There's relatively low cost ways of doing that with social media, for example, and all of our stations can do better about that. And you're right, even KPFA could use more listeners. You know, there's a lot of people in the Bay Area that don't know about KPFA and don't know about the great programming that we have. So we need to help. I guess I'm asking everybody to tell your friends about your favorite shows. That's one way we can get more listeners, and that will in turn help eventually getting more members and donations also.
And again, that email address is PNB, that's Pacifica National Board, at Pacifica.org. If you would like your feedback to influence their decisions about how to address the prospect of liens and asset seizures come Monday, your deadline is 5:30 tonight when they are scheduled to start the public session of their last meeting before that deadline. Next on the line, we have Grace in Menlo Park. Good morning.
I don't think we can hear from Grace. Don't usually play call-ins, but tenor of the times comes through. That's from the Bay Area. And I was checking with Doug Henwood to see if he's posted anything recently. He's been a go-to guy on this. In fact, it was broke the story. Broke the logjam on lack of information. I hope he does it again soon. We don't know what happened in this last meeting, whether loan has been taken, whether they got off the dime and voted to protect the assets on Monday. Again, Texas might be gone first. I don't know. I was looking through Doug Henwood's pages to find out. He collaborates with this guy a bit. Oh, I did have a text from someone who works with AWARE. The 2-4 meeting is perhaps postponed, at least suspended for today because of the fierce wind chill out there. It's supposed to break all next week, it turns out. I thought it was going to ice storm on tomorrow and get back cold again, but things will hopefully be thawing out shortly. And we're going to kick it off right now. Opinions you hear are those of your speakers. That's again from the show Upfront from